Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable, which is right now the OIG Trade Table, because Wade is out on travel doing some client visits and doing Wade things, I guess. I don't know. But I've got Matt Kachansky here, retired special agent in charge from HHS OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director, and now our payment integrity director on our SIU team. And today we want to revisit a topic we talked about a bit ago, but with a little bit of a different spin to it. We want to talk about on-sites and SIU investigative work for on-sites as an investigative technique. And the reason we want to highlight that is a couple of things. Number one, we have, for one of our clients, we've created a pretty expansive checklist for on-sites and a policy that SIUs can follow. And so anybody out there who may have an interest in that can reach out to us and we can discuss, discuss that policy and discuss how we can help your SIU with shaping that policy so you're not reinventing the wheel. But interestingly enough, we recently, with one of our larger SIU plan contracts, have started doing a pretty robust on-sites, and we're not doing, so on-sites take two categories. There's the physical surveillance where you're just kind of parking and sitting and taking notes and doing all that. And then there's on-sites where you're actually going in and doing the on-site and visiting the place, speaking to people, communicating, pulling records and the like. The one thing that we've noticed from the one project that we worked on was, so first of all, you get instant spontaneous feedback. We are doing a ton of work involving on-site surveillance of the physical location of clinics that are outliers for certain things. One example was an organization that we had set our team out, and during the course of the day, not a single patient walked in the door of the clinic. And lo and behold, a couple of days later, claims were submitted for, I think it was somewhere about 80 or 90, maybe even 100 patients for that day. Not a single person showed up at that location on that day. And so that is immediate actionable intelligence where you can go and immediately seek either an overpayment, look to take administrative action against your provider for that. And so we're doing a ton of that work. And that is even one step above prepay, right? You're not even waiting for the provider to turn in their records. You have actionable intelligence that can do that. We have access to an inordinate amount of external audio, video recording equipment so that it can become really cost effective to be able to do this where you're not having investigators sitting out for days on end, not working cases, that ROI stays there. But what you're really doing is you're stopping those dollars from going out the door before even the claim is paid or anything. You can flag those claims very quickly. And it's not even a prepay. You're denying basically on the fact that you've got people providing that key component, human intelligence, not just data. So Matt, let's talk about that because you put together actually, you rewrote and created the policy for one of our clients, and we've used it with some of our other clients regarding on-sites and the importance of that. And what we're not talking about is, we're not at the OIG anymore. So we're not talking about, a law enforcement type situation where we're preparing for a search warrant or something like that. But doing that surveillance in support of an on-site and then on-sites and taking all of that, there's a ton of intelligence that you can gather. But then also when you're doing these on-sites, the kind of things that you're gleaning from the pre-planning surveillance and the like. So let's talk a little about the importance of doing that. But then also let's talk about, for an on-site, let's talk about when you're requesting records, probes, statistical, and then the tester files that you want.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's follow up a little bit on your, we're not the OIG, we're not the FBI. You know, it's not a surveillance, it's observational. You know, you're just observing things from a public venue. You know, you're not going in and sitting in the waiting room, counting the patients. You're in a public area seeing who's going in the door, coming out the door. Got to make sure that it's not, there's no privacy issues involved in what you're doing, that it's all public. So that's one. The other is, like an interview, like any other investigative step, proper planning. you know, when, you know, if you're going to go out and you're going to observe something for an hour, 2 hours, pick the right time, pick the right day, look at the data. You know, what's that provider's historical busiest day and time? Go there, go at that time for that, you know, that following week or whatever, and see, you know, is it true that that's happening or not? Or is it like what we've been finding, you know, there's nobody coming in the door. You know, there's no patients here. It's just a shell. And you know, and then the bills come in.
Right.
So you have to do proper planning.
1 second. So let's talk about that a little bit about in that proper planning is picking the right day and time, mm-hmm. right? Like that is probably one of the key pieces so that you are in keeping your ROI maximized, your ROI on putting in this effort is not just going and saying, I'm going to go sit there on a Monday from 10 to 12, right? It's, yeah. You have to be very judicious in understanding, and this is where data analytics is going to come into play, right?
Right. You're going to look at the data history, you know, historically, what are their busiest days? What are their busiest hours within those days? You know, do they have office hours on Friday? You know, and just take that day off the calendar if you don't see any billings for that day. And then you pick, you know, historically, maybe it's Wednesdays from late morning to early afternoon, or afternoon on Wednesdays are their busiest times in terms of the billing history. That's when you go. And then you see, you know, does the traffic that you see justify the billings that you've right. seen in the data history? And then you wait a week, 2 weeks, see what the bills come in for that day, and see if the bills, you know, are like the history and it shows that it's their busiest time, or are they in line with what you've seen in terms of patient traffic?
Right. Now, you know, what you can't necessarily account for is when is the busiest time of the day, because the claims are the claims may yeah. have a date and timestamp, but date and timestamps are not when the service was rendered. It's when the claim was received.
It's in,
right.
That's true.
It's yeah. it's not. But you can certainly narrow down if Wednesday is the busiest, is a busier day than others, you know, that you've at least got a yeah. day that you can pick. Right. And you have to kind of yeah. pick and
You're
choose.
Right.
And I think, you know, from that observational perspective for me, if I know that Wednesday is a busy day, maybe one Wednesday I go and I mm-hmm. sit from 9 to noon. Another day I sit and I go from noon to 3 or something
right.
like that. But the key point of that is it's observational. You're sitting in a public space. If you're going to take any video, camera, photograph, anything like that, it's from a public space at the distance. It's observational in nature. You know, the key component is you don't want to sit yourself in a parking spot 3 feet from the entrance. You want to be a bit away, you know, observational. And, you know, do you have, if someone comes over to, you know, security in a parking lot or something, if someone comes, is there potentially some observational statement you can make about it? You know, whether it's a ruse or something like that. These are all things that you have to contemplate that are both going to be potentially policy related. What are your state statutes on, for example, videotaping people in public places and consent, all of those things. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you choose to just sit with good old pen and paper, and take observational notes, the important piece of that is that those observational notes need to be inordinately detailed. What time did you get there? When did you leave? Where in the parking lot did you sit? What was your view? Did you have an unobstructed, partially obstructed, whatever it may be, during that time period? How could you guarantee, for example, if you're looking at a building in which there may be multiple office suites, how are you confirming that everybody that walks through the entrance of the building is actually going to your subject's place? Does it mean that you're actually sitting not so much in a car in the parking lot? Are you sitting in a common area in the building, you know, and just kind of counting people that walk in and walk out the door? But these are all very important pieces of the puzzle, because ultimately, if you are going to then go and do a match and say, hey, you know, during the course of the day that I sat there, 2 days later, there were 1,000 billings, you know, some ridiculous number, and no one walked in the door. You want to be able to have a really well-documented investigative file to be able to support. If you're going to deny all those claims or look to take other action based upon, you know, a history or credible allegation, you know, where's all that documentation going? And this is even before you've even walked in the door on an onsite.
Right. And you hit on it, the other actions. You know, you can probably, you know, deny those claims and let them fight it. You can also then, you know, what are some other things you can do based on the results of that observation? Can you put them on prepay after that? Because you have pretty direct evidence that they're billing for things that probably aren't happening, that they're not rendering, or can you use it for justification to actually do a full on-site, to go on-site and get medical records and talk to the provider and their staff and get a good indication of what the daily routine is in that office, and you know, how many patients do they actually see? You can see their calendars, you can see their sign-in sheets, and how many patients do they actually, you know, encounter every day versus what they bill. And that'll give you, you know, ample justification for the resources that you would need to, you know, to conduct such an activity. And that's where, again, proper planning comes in. And it isn't a search warrant, but it's as close to a search warrant as an SIU is going to get, because you are going into the space of the provider, you know, with the intent of doing them, you know, financial harm at best.
Right. And a key component of keeping that in mind is that the information that you gather is going to be then helpful for you when you do your on-site. The one caveat to all of this is that you've got to be, as an SIU investigator, you've got to be inordinately conversant with what your payer's policy is on this. And that's where, you know, we've helped with developing that policy and that checklist of what you should and shouldn't do. And it can be, and it's as simple as things like, when you show up, what are you presenting? Do you have an ID? Do you have a corporate ID that you can wear that shows that you are who you are, a photograph corporate ID? Do you have a business card that further supports that? But let's talk about for a little bit. I mean, so we're seeing some really big successes with the fact that we're sending out our physical teams to go out and do this physical surveillance. And we've got the ability to do some other related things that don't require the physical presence of an investigator, some electronic measures and things of that sort that we've invested in to be able to provide this to our client base. But let's talk about, you know, when going to an on-site, and obviously there's a lot. We could talk about this for hours, but with kind of the short amount of time we've got, I think the important thing to talk about is when you're going on an on-site, one of the key components of doing an on-site is the collection of records, is the collection of the medical records for the dates of service that you want. And we've exhaustively discussed statistical sampling and probe sampling. And depending upon what you're looking to do, you're going to do a probe or a statistical sample. And likely part of the on-site is that you have, part of that is giving that list to your provider so that you can pick up those records on the day that you show up, whether it's statistical or a probe sample. And those are investigative decisions. But another piece of that is on site is producing a secondary list of records you want right then and there that they pull right then and there, so that we have them as like whatever tester claims or something like that. So let's talk a little bit about why that's an important piece of the puzzle as well.
Yeah, the tester claims are really important because they're going to be separate from the SVRS, so they wouldn't be part of the extrapolated overpayment and things like that. But you should choose those based on, you know, the facts of the case. These are case, you know, these are going to be the sample, the specific claims that you have a good deal of information about that you don't think those things are happening. So maybe they are the claims on the day that you did the observation. You want to see the medical records right now for these patients that you billed for on this day, when you have a good indication that those patients were never there that day. So you get those records then, and so what that does is that A, ratchets up the notice to the provider that you know what's going on here, and you know it's you know, the pucker factor raises up at that point for the provider. And it gives you immediate access to the records that you believe are the most suspect. And what you can have, maybe bring a coder or a nurse with you on the onsite. They can look at a few of those right then and there and say, yeah, there's nothing here, or there's doctored evidence here or whatever. And that can then lead to further interviews of the staff, and how were these records produced? Is there a charting party? What is, again, going back to what is the pattern and practice in this office for what they're doing? So it gives you right. a lot of additional evidence to help you with the execution of the onsite from that point.
Right. And I mean, just to keep it in the same vein, when we get back to, while we're not at the OIG, there's still kind of the investigative best practices that you can follow. Because an onsite, whether it's done in a law enforcement capacity or an SIU related capacity, there are some things that are going to be similar in nature, right? And number one is the purpose of going on site is because you think you have a really bad actor and you've got some information that suggests maybe there's an altering, a doctoring, or destruction of records, something like that. And so you want those kind of tester claims. And by the way, even though you may have a statistical sample of records and you pull another, say, 10 records that are going to be your tester claims, you should still review them. Don't take right. them without the intention of reviewing them. Like
correct.
It's part and parcel. They're just not part of your statistical sample or your extrapolation. They're already contemplated in statistical sampling and the overpayment estimation, but it's still something you should be considering. And that number is really an inconsequential number, right? So we talk about in the world of probe sampling, CMS Program Integrity Manual, Chapter 8 on statistical sampling and overpayment estimation. I think it's actually Section 8.4 specifically talks about that. But the premise of probe samples in the CMS world is 20 to 40. And we always recommend to our clients that your probe sample number should be 30 for consistency. Because what you don't want is a situation where you are in a hearing, an administrative hearing or whatever, and there is no consistency. Someone's going to get 20, someone's getting 40, someone's getting 35, and it's kind of a patchwork of things. If you stay with that consistency of 30, you can say, hey, we're following the CMS Program Integrity Manual. It says 20 to 40, we take 30. That's for consistency across our team. But when you're looking at these tester claims outside of either your 30 probe or your statistical sample of records, you know, you can ask for an additional five or so records. It's the number's inconsequential. What you really should do is make sure that if you're doing either that statistical or probe, you're giving that list to the provider beforehand when you're doing a scheduled on-site. And most of these in the SIU space should be scheduled because you don't want to raise that temperature up because it is not a law enforcement operation. So you really want to use your unscheduled on-sites very judiciously for a lot of reasons we can discuss offline. But always keep in mind that the records that you're pulling for your tester claims, you don't let the provider know that, but you obviously need to know that, for example, if you're doing a statistical sample of records, even though those records get reviewed, you're not putting those back into your sampling for your extrapolation. But as we kind of wrap up, Matt, let's talk about kind of the hit list. And I know we have a very exhaustive checklist and we don't want to give, mm-hmm. you know, away the whole store, but let's talk about some of the key components. For example, on an onsite, you know, we've heard instances where SIUs are sending one or two people to do an onsite of a large multi-practice, you know, specialty practice that could have seven or eight doctors and a large number of staff. And while there really isn't a magic number of people, certainly one person on an onsite is certainly not going to be an appropriate number. It should be some number. But, you know, let's talk about kind of the, what are some of the key pieces to think about for doing an onsite?
Yeah, some of the key pieces are there, you know, let's start with interviews. For any interview, there should be two people doing the interview, one taking notes, one asking the questions. And it's just for integrity purposes, as well as safety purposes. You need more than one person going on site, you know, for interviews, at least two doing them. So if you've got multiple interviews, if you only bring in two people, you're going to be doing those consecutively and not concurrently. So that's a time issue that you might want to consider in your planning. The other is there are so many other things you want to be doing while you're on site, gathering the medical records, whether that's just handing them the list or actually making copies or downloading them, you know, electronically from their EHR. So that's another resource that you have to think about in planning your thing. The other is taking a tour of the office. It might be that some of the issues relate to, do they have the equipment there that is needed to do some of the things that they're billing? So you're going to need to tour the office to see that equipment, take pictures of it, check out the, you know, the latest time it was maintenance and things like that to make sure it's, you know, up to par. So all of those things take people and they take time. So, and the other consideration is you're going in probably when there's patients in the office. You're not going to have open access to the people you want to interview. They're going to be like seeing you between patients or after the day. So you have to take into consideration how many people do you need to do these things and squeeze in these other things, you know, between times. So, you know, when I was with the UPIC, we would take a minimum of four people on any onsite. You know, two to do the interviews, two to do the other things.
Right.
And they always stayed in pairs.
Right. And, you know, part of that pre-operational planning is thinking about, for example, is this case involve an item, service, or procedure that requires the intervention of a provider with a piece of equipment and knowing whether or not that equipment is there or not. And you brought this up, but an important piece that is, are you going, if you're going to do anything, you always want to make sure you're asking permission. You don't have carte blanche. It's not a search warrant. You know, the thing is that people should always understand during a search warrant, you are no longer in control of that place. It's law enforcement's place. During the period of that search warrant, law enforcement owns and controls that space. And so photographs are part of that law enforcement operation. From an SIU perspective, if a provider says, you know, you should be asking the provider, can I take a picture of this? Because particularly if it's a piece of equipment that is used for claims, is that piece of equipment dusty? Is it in a closet? Does it look like it's not been out or been serviced in a year or two? Like, you know, what's the story with that? If the provider says, no, you cannot take photographs, then that's where it is super important to rely upon your secondary piece of equipment, the pen and paper. Right. If you can't take photographs, that it should be pen and paper where you're fully documenting what you observed from that piece of equipment. So we address a lot of this in our operational planning document, our checklist of things. You know, there's a ton of stuff out there. But, you know, for us, as we kind of wrap up, the key piece of this is, you know, kind of where we started is physical observations before you do an on-site or anything can really reap incredible benefits. I mean, we didn't realize that we were going to have the actionable intelligence as quickly as we were going to get. The provider in this one particular clinic literally submitted claims within a few days of our on-site observations from outside. And this facility happened to be a standalone. So it wasn't like there was a door and anybody and everybody's going in and there's 20 businesses. This was a standalone. So it was a little bit easier to do, but you know, we were able to help facilitate with our payer client stopping the bleeding of a lot of money because of that. And obviously it opens up the door to a very robust investigation because now you're identifying people. You know, this was a substance abuse disorder clinic. People are theoretically going every day for a combination of therapy, medication, and the like. So if, you know, the provider billed for 90 people or 100 people, I'm making up a number in the course of that day, and they're supposed to be there every day. Did no one show up that day, but they showed up the other 4 days? So you've got a really good platform by which to start taking some actionable, some actions against people because you've got actionable intelligence. And, you know, you sometimes will be surprised what you find just from sitting outside for a few minutes. So final thoughts, Matt, on that is, you know, obviously we believe in it and we're seeing some really good benefits that come out of it. There's a ton of collateral stuff that comes out of there. Are all the doctors working that day?
Are they credentialed, you know, correctly for doing the services that they're providing? You know, are they there, you know, are therapists there when they're doing physical therapy, or is it just assistants or aides that need supervision, but the supervisor isn't there? All of those things you can find only one way, and that's through onsites.
Right. Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff records don't tell you. And that's where, you know, we have this conversation all the time. Data will lie to you until you've confirmed it told the truth. But data analytics is one part of what really becomes that human intelligence. And that's why, you know, we take pride here in the fact that we're doing the analytics and the services together because they work symbiotically. You cannot just have analytics by themselves because you are going to need to root out your false positives through that investigative piece of the puzzle. So, you know, it's something to consider, particularly for smaller plans that don't have big budgets, you know, we try to do these things at a price point that makes it palatable, but also provides for, you know, for ROI on a lot of these that make it financially viable for a plan to do it. So again, if you want some more information about on-sites and observational related investigation work that's done in the live setting, you know, feel free to reach out to us. Again, get us through our newsletter. You can get us by the website, advisehealth.com, as well as taking a look at our weekly newsletter. You can get up on the website. We have a refreshed website, and the newsletter has also been refreshed. So we appreciate everybody for jumping on and joining us for this. And until next week, we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable.
Thank you, everybody.